Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, it is Michael Bumpus, host of the Seahawks pre- and post-game show. Bump, I wish I could talk to you about the Apple Cup. Unfortunately, it's old news. We don't have time. So let's go ahead and jump to the Seahawks taking on the 49ers this weekend. Man, anything you want to start out with the Seahawks?
No, actually, I want to start with the Apple Cup and just say it feels really good.
You know, Bump, you might be cutting out.
It's been a while, you know, and brought my dogs out there. It's all good. Your helmets were fire. The helmets were fire.
Thank you so much, Bump. Feels great.
Hey, Bump, how did it feel watching that game? Watching Washington State put up, how many points was that?
I don't know, 13?
40.
Oh, 40.
Oh, I forgot. It's
put up a 40 burger.
Oh, that was so long.
It was
long
beautiful.
Ago.
I had great seats, too, so it was awesome.
Did you ever think that the Cougs would eventually plant the flag in the middle of UW's field? Did you ever think you were going to see that?
Man, that was a sight to see. I know Jane has to realize they're going to be coming for him now.
That's exactly
you know what
right.
I'm saying?
That's exactly right.
But it's all good. I'll take it for a year.
All right. Well, I will go to the Seahawks with this time. First of all, taking on the 49ers, I want to start with the 49ers run game. It's a question I've been wondering all week, which is just how they've been able to make their run game work. Now, maybe part of this is me not giving Elijah Mitchell enough credit, right? Because he's a sixth-round pick, and I'm talking about it like it's like, can you believe this guy is good? And he's fantastic, and good on him. But the 49ers have also managed to make a run game work despite losing starters what feels like every year. What do they do really well there?
It starts with the big boys up front. I don't think this offensive line is talked about enough. Once they get their paws on you, you're connected and they're taking you where they want to go. Another thing these guys do is they line up in the split back formation. They'll put Kittle back there. Debo will be back there sometimes, but he's hurt now. Can't count on that. Juszczyk really makes this run game go. He usually leads the way. You see him on an outside zone lead. He'll fake the outside zone lead, then take care of the backside in. They really move him and put him in different places. And there's a lot of zone, a lot of gap. They're just really good at running the football. They got the right personnel. And Elijah Mitchell, man, I mean, the way he runs his zone, it's like he's perfectly fast and slow at the same time. Like, he gets the football, he presses the B gap, takes you right, lets the defense flow, he gets backside. It's like, it's almost like they practice a lot. You know what I'm saying? It's
crazy.
Like, they know what they're doing out there. It's fun to watch.
Well, you know, Bump, that brings into a question that Stacy kept grilling me about and asking me about is, well, how come the Seahawks can't do that? How come the Seahawks can't be that type of team? And, Bump, you know, you look at a team like the Seahawks, and yeah, Pete Carroll, it's his one of his biggest philosophies of playing great defense and then closing the circle of toughness by having a physical run game. But, you know, my answer to Stacy was is that they don't have the personnel to do it. It's just plain and simple. Is that what you're seeing, or why do you think that the Seahawks don't have as strong of a run game or have a run game that they can lean to?
I think that's it. You just don't have the guys to do it. I mean, like I said, this offensive line is extremely talented, and they're really good at what they do. And then you look at just the way, how creative they are in the run game. You see glimpses of it. Like, and I feel bad for Shane because it's rare that he's had all of his offensive linemen out there. He only had a few games of number 32 out there. Number 3 has been banged up as well. So you can't even get into a groove if you wanted to if you don't have all your guys out there. But it comes down to personnel. I mean, Elijah Mitchell is better than any running back that we have on our roster right now, including AP. I know people think AP is going to save the day. That ain't going to happen.
What do you mean, Bob?
He's a future Hall of Famer, but his glory days are behind him. It's not going to happen. It comes down to personnel and then just – being able to coach these guys up to really understand what you're trying to do. But, what they say, it's not up to the coaches, it's up to the players, man. It's personnel all day.
I wanted to start with the run game, but kind of looking back, I know we're going to be looking forward a lot, but looking back, bump. I was shocked that DK Metcalf wasn't targeted until the third, didn't even have a reception until the fourth quarter. I know that a lot goes into that, and some of what goes into that kind of thing is stuff that we on the outside will never understand, right? Different reads, guys being part of different plans and all that. But it's at the same time feels inexcusable to not get DK a catch. I mean, how much of that is on DK? How much of it is on Russ? How much of it is on game plan when that kind of thing happens?
I think everyone plays a part into this deal. And I watched the game over and over again. I'm like, okay, were there opportunities for DK to get the football in the first half? That play where Alex Collins fumbled the football down the sideline, that play was designed for DK. If Russ had time, I think he hits DK right there. There are times that big play to Tyler Lockett where he's running the deep cross. Tyler becomes open. I think there's a chance if that corner did what he was supposed to do, which he didn't, I think DK gets the football there. And then there was a 3rd and 1 or 3rd and 2 where Russell throws it to D. Eskridge on a slant instead of DK on the backside on a hitch. I'm like, okay, he could have gone to DK there. I just don't think they are designing enough plays for DK. I think that they're going out there. They're trying to take what the defense is giving them. But at some point, you got to be like, we have to get this guy the football and give him a 50-50 ball. And I'm not talking about that deep ball down the sideline where I think Freddie Swain was wide open in the middle of the field. Russ forces it to DK. Not those type of 50-50s. Get this guy in stride. I mean, we're used to seeing DK catch the ball over his shoulder and just go. So, I mean, Russ has to take some accountability with that because he missed him a few times. I think Shane has to do a good job drawing him up. And then, you know, DK has to just make sure when his number is called that he's using his leverage and he's getting guys open. It's never as simple as just pointing the finger to one guy. Everybody plays a part in this, but yeah, it's ridiculous. DK should have 8 to 10 targets a game easily.
Yeah, there's really no excuse for it. And that's why, you know, it's frustrating. So, you know, there's some times the games dictate where, hey, one guy's going to pop off and have a bigger game than another, but there shouldn't be a lack of trying, right? There should not be a lack of trying to get both Tyler and DK involved in the game, and that's something they haven't been able to do. But quite frankly, I mean, you talk about all these things. That's why it's so frustrating for me as I look at this offense and I look to the answers, and I think it's very reflective in Pete Carroll's response, you know, saying, hey, I'm saying the same things over and over again to you guys in terms of what can't get fixed, what can't get done. I mean, Bump, is there any chance in these 6 games that we hear something different, we hear something positive?
I think there's a chance. And the positives on this offense is that Gerald Everett is involved, which is awesome. I mean, Gerald could have had 9 catches for 100 yards last week, but Rush just missed him on 3 or 4 throws. So there's a positive there. You got to find a way to get the run game going. I don't know what that is. I think this O-line has been struggling a little bit. They seem to get out of their frame a bit, like they're reaching for guys. Their base isn't underneath them. It really comes down to technique, and I'm sure you saw it too in Russ. There's a couple of footballs where Russ is throwing all arms. He's not getting his lower body involved. You know, yep. It's like things just aren't clicking for these guys right now. But everything that I see, I'm like, okay, it's fixable. Because then you'll see a drive, like the potential game-tying drive that they had, when everything's clicking, you know, where Russell's keeping his eyes down the field. He's moving up in the pocket. He's taking a check down even for 2 yards just to keep things going. So you see it, and you're like, okay, it's there. Now, how do you get these guys to do it drive by drive? That's the mystery right there. But to me, it all starts on 1st and 2nd down, man. 3rd and 9, you might as well get the punt team ready to go because the Hawks just aren't great on 3rd and 9. So stuff is there, Jake. It's there, but you know, you still got to go out and execute.
Hey, I had really high hopes for D. Eskridge heading into this season, and maybe that was unfair, but it certainly was unfair given that he had to spend about a month plus out of the game and then come back. Obviously, we're all excited to see what he can look like, but Bump, we talked to him on the huddle the other day, and he was talking about kind of how he sees himself as a player, his relationship with other receivers. And he said it was an interesting comparison. Maybe given his size, I expected him to compare himself to Tyler Lockett, but he compared himself to DK Metcalf in terms of maybe the way he attacks the ball, maybe the way he wants to play, his own personal attributes, obviously like body size excluded. Is that the kind of receiver you see, and what have you made of him so far in his first couple games back?
No, I don't see him as a DK. I mean, every receiver would love to have the physique of DK.
Right. I also see myself as a DK.
And, you know, mentally, maybe he's a DK. You know, he wants the football. He's going to play with a lot of passion. But the way I see him more of a Tyreek Hill type of receiver. Now, he's not Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill is special. He's the fastest guy in the league. He can do some things, but that's the way that I saw them using D. Eskridge. So far, he's just a guy trying to find his place right now. It's so hard. It's so hard to get into a rhythm when you've been out for so long. And now it's so hard to get into a rhythm when your offense has so many three and outs. It's like, we can't even start being creative with this guy because we're not setting up the next play. I mean, last week on Monday Night Football in the second half, they had five consecutive three and outs. So as a coordinator, you're looking at your play sheet. You're like, okay, we got to get to this. We got to get to that. But when you're on the field for such a short time, you can never get to things. You're still trying to kickstart this offense and get going. So he's a young guy trying to find his way. Now, they've used him. I think he caught like a five-yard out last week. They used him in the jet sweep. I mean, that's as good as it gets for him right now. Until this line can protect, until Russ can settle down, go through his progressions and get three. I need three drives over eight or nine plays. Once they can start doing that, then I think we'll see a bit more of D. Eskridge.
Yeah, and that is such a huge part of it, right? I mean, you talk about the crippling aspect of them not being able to sustain those drives, Bump. I mean, everybody talks about the time of possession and all that and what it does to help your defense. There's no doubt. But in terms of establishing any sort of rhythm for your quarterback, rhythm for your play caller, I mean, all of it is just, I don't know if I've seen anything quite like it, Bump. I don't know if you have, but, you know, have we really been able to get an idea of who Shane Waldron is as a play caller?
I don't think so. I really don't. And you're right. It's about rhythm. You know what it is when I watch the Seahawks offense at times? It's like when you're dreaming and you're trying to run and you can't run. You know, you're like, you're fighting it. Like, I can't open up my gate in this run. That's how this offense feels. It's like they just can't really get going. And if you cannot put at least 5 to 8 plays together, then you really can't start connecting plays. Like, you can set plays up in the first quarter and say, okay, right, we're going to get back to this. You can never get back to that because you're steady trying to kickstart. And all right, we're going to run the zone. We're going to run our quick stuff. And now, instead of running the zone, you want to run that zone boot, bam, get out the pocket, go over the top. Instead of running this quick, all right, we're going to quick and go, throw a little hitch and go, bam, over the top. So it's just because they're not allowed to get going, they're not allowed to connect a lot of plays, which makes it look really simple. So people look at this offense, they're like, man, it's so simple, man. I don't see any creativity. They don't have the opportunity because they're always in third and longs, and it hurts them.
All right. He is Michael Bumpus, NFL analyst, former player. He's also the host of the Seahawks pre- and post-game show. Make sure you tune in this Sunday. There's a 1:25 kickoff, but tune in at 10 a.m. for the start of that pregame, and make sure you stick around after. Bump and the guys will have interviews, all kinds of good stuff. Thanks so much, Bump.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks, Bump. You too.
Football Fridays are powered by the Snoqualmie Casino Sportsbook. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one still is so sweet to say this.
You're laughing already when you say it.
The OKC Thunder set an NBA record for the very worst loss in league history, losing to the Memphis Grizzlies by 73 points last night. What's the real headline?
73 points? The city of Seattle thinks Memphis could have tried a little harder.
I think so.
I mean, personally, do I think you didn't give it your all, Memphis? Yeah. Yeah, I do. Not to put you on blast right now.
It's like that gif of Adam Driver. More!
Yeah,
want more!
Exactly. More!
Yes. Keep going.
Yeah.
This is like sweet nectar. Just, you know, with everything going the way it has here in this town as of recent, it is always good to be able to look at the OKC Thunder and see them get it taken to them and have the curse rightfully set upon them. I mean, gosh, I can't stand them. And I wish nothing but horrible, horrible failure.
They lost by 73 last night. They only scored 79 points. So the deficit was almost as much as the points that they were able to put in the bucket. I thought there was a great tweet last night. Worldwide Wob, who is an incredible NBA Twitter user, he said that when the Dream Team had their run in Barcelona in 92, when they were blowing everybody out, when they played Angola, that game was only decided by 68 points. So OKC put up a worse effort than Angola did against like the 12 greatest basketball players ever.
You absolutely love to see it.
Also, to see a franchise that was extremely successful for a while, like making the playoffs, be fun, be entertaining, just watch them completely just put themselves into a dumpster fire situation.
What are your three most hated teams?
OKC number one.
In order.
Yeah, OKC number one.
OKC number one.
Where's Houston? Yankees?
I think the Yankees are probably my second.
Yeah, I'd put them at two. And then probably
Would the Astros be three or someone else?
After that would be the 49ers.
Now, question. 49ers?
Yeah.
I don't care. I mean, I care.
You don't?
The Astros are up there.
49ers are out of the top five.
Can't stand the 49ers.
I don't know. There are other teams I hate more because there's just... It's easier for me to hate a team that's doing really well all the time because you're mad that they keep winning. It's like the rich get richer kind of thing.
Yeah, for me, I can stick onto a rivalry no matter if they're winning or losing.
Does that list of top three change if I tell you guys you can choose individual athletes or people?
Well, yes, that does change. That's an entirely different conversation. It's like what individual athlete do you root against? I mean, that is
number
very
one on
different.
That list.
That's very different. I'd have to think about it.
Probably Tom Brady right now, right?
That's number one.
Really? For you?
It used to be.
I don't know that it is anymore.
Yeah. I don't.
He's crossed that threshold from villain back to good guy.
For a long time, it was Alex Rodriguez for me. For a long time, it was A-Rod. Wherever he was.
And then he kind of crossed back into the threshold of good guy when he was starting out as a broadcaster, but then he stepped out on the town on J-Lo.
Yeah.
How dare you? For that, we won't forgive him.
But hey, if he moves the Timberwolves back to Seattle...
Good guy again.
...and becomes a son, he's a great guy. Yeah. He's the best guy.
All of a sudden, we're like, you know what? I get it. People fall apart.
I've always said Alex Rodriguez was a great guy.
I've never said anything bad about him. You've never heard it on this show.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, college football conference championship weekend is here. It starts tonight. What's the real headline?
Good news. We're about to watch a ton of games that will factor into the college football playoffs. Also, we're going to be watching the Pac-12 conference championship.
Just so bad.
Both things are true. We're going to be watching
so
important
much.
Games that mean
Six
something.
Years in a row? 5 years in a row?
Unfortunately.
Why, Pac-12, do you have to be so irrelevant? But Lincoln Riley is coming in on that shining white horse of his down there with the Trojans. And maybe he'll turn things around here in the Pac-12. That is our only hope, okay, for some relevancy here at the Pac-12.
Obi-Wan Riley, you're our only hope.
That's right, exactly. Outside of that, we
celebrated Larry Scott leaving, and we were like, we did it!
Yes.
Hang the mission accomplished banner.
The stink of Larry Scott is going to take some time. I wish George Kliff Goff the best of luck as head of the Pac-12, and he hasn't done anything so far to warrant any sort of like major criticism, but I think that's mostly due in large part to the guy who he followed
up. Yeah, that's true. Larry Scott did a lot.
George Kliff Goff's got the easiest commissioner job in the country because it's like, I don't have to be as bad as the guy I
correct?
Yeah.
It's not hard to do.
No.
It's not hard to do at all. So, I mean, obviously, now that part of it makes it interesting. But the other thing is that this, despite all of that, despite the hurt that the Pac-12 is not nationally relevant, this Pac-12 game is actually going to be fun. It's going to be fun to watch because Utah absolutely ruined every shot, every opportunity for Oregon to get into the college football playoff. And they're going to face off again. And we'll see if Kyle Whittingham can coach these guys up to have another upset against Oregon. That would be even sweeter as you watch Utah beat them twice.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, the Kraken return home tonight for a four-game homestand, starting with the Edmonton Oilers, and they're looking to build off their respectable road trip. What is the real headline?
You know what this means, Curtis. Here we go. Say with me, this is the headline. You know it. Quest for the Cup with a C is back on. Right. I am making it happen. Quest for the Cup with a C because Stanley Cup, the cup has a, it's a C. That's how you spell it. So then you spell quest with a C as well.
This is the worst series of marketing that you've ever done in your life.
Not.
It should be with a K.
No, but neither Quest nor Cup are spelled with a K.
Yeah, but the Kraken.
The Kraken are spelled with a K.
Yeah, but I just feel like the Kardashians kind of have the market on
why
that.
Why do they factor into this?
Because they all they of them
have
to
they
do, all
why
of them
do they
have
matter?
K, all of them have K names. They're going to try to, they're going to get their legal reasons. They're going to get involved.
No.
No.
Stacey.
You're going Quest with the cup for a C. It's
you
the
can't
off
copyright
brand.
A letter.
No,
correct.
You'll be surprised. Kris Jenner works hard. This is Quest for the cup with a C. It's the off-brand
no,
Quest for
Stacey,
Stanley Cup.
That is why
and the Kraken are making it happen.
That's why your original merch is sitting somewhere in a soggy box.
No, I don't think so.
In a dumpster somewhere.
Really, I guarantee you, I could sell a Quest for the cup with a C T-shirt today.
Wow, you guys want some breaking news before we go
Absolutely.
To break here?
Yeah,
the Seahawks are switching it up with a different uniform combo at home for the first time in a long time.
Okay.
They're going blue jerseys, wolf gray pants, which I don't think is a jersey combo they've worn at home.
Hold up. Navy
ever.
Navy jersey tops, wolf gray pants.
Yeah. I don't think they've ever worn that
boy.
Uniform combo.
Do you know
at
when
home.
They've
done it on the road. And I think the last time they did it was that Dallas Cowboys playoff game.
Yeah. That's when I remember.
Run the ball, man. Run the ball.
I loved the uni combo. I thought it looked sweet.
KJ Wright had a pick in that.
I actually really liked the combo. That game brings up a lot of painful memories.
This is interesting to me. Hey, but, if something's not working, you got to fix everything.
You got to try. You got to try whatever you have to do.
I thought you were going to say
figure it all out.
I'm glad they
could have
mixed
picked
in the color rush. Like,
they could have gone white jerseys, green pants.
Oh,
that would have been fun.
No, it wouldn't, Curtis. No, it would not.
I'm here for it. I want to see it one day.
No, you don't.
Yeah,
you don't
I do.
All
that.
Right, you're going to have a new starting quarterback in the NFL this weekend. We're going to take a look around the rest of the league next. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Let's look around the rest of the NFL. We'll start in New York, where Mike Glennon is getting the start for Daniel Jones and the Giants. Now, I don't really care about Mike Glennon himself. He's not like their new starter, their new guy. But my question is Daniel Jones going to be their guy?
I don't think so.
I mean,
there's nothing about Danny Dimes that screams, hey, you are a franchise guy and you should be given every opportunity to prove it here in New York. I mean, I think that Danny Dimes is a fine quarterback, but I also don't think that he is a guy that's going to elevate the New York Giants to new heights. And I certainly would not be willing to pass up other opportunities to get better if I was the New York Giants, either via the draft or free agency, whatever that may be, or a trade. And I think that is absolutely something they should be looking into.
Quarterback Kyler Murray is expected to play this weekend for the Cardinals. DeAndre Hopkins also with a chance to come back. Although Kingsbury said that they're going to be kind of taking it easy, making sure that he's safe, because obviously this is the best run they've had in years. You can't risk losing him, and a high ankle sprain can obviously become much worse if you continue to damage it. Question for you guys. With the Cardinals where they are right now, a pretty safe lead in the NFC West, do you start Murray this weekend?
Yeah, I would. Absolutely. I mean, but the thing is that you have to make sure. You have to make sure, absolutely, that he is 100%. I mean, obviously, when you're seeing this with Russell Wilson, you want to make sure that you're getting, when you get him back on the field in Kyler Murray, that he is feeling good, that things are rolling, and that he is going to be able to have success when he steps on the field. Now, with the Cardinals and the way that they've been going, Stacey, I have zero doubt that that'll be the case. I mean, everything's clicking on the right in the right way. They got a great running game. Offensive line's been good. The passing game's been functional. I mean, so there's really no reason to hold him out if he's healthy and ready to go.
All right. Well, speaking of if he's ready to go, is Adrian Peterson going to be ready to go? The Seahawks added the 36-year-old veteran future Hall of Fame running back to the practice squad. Now, whether or not he's going to play this weekend, TBD. On the Pete Carroll preview, Pete Carroll told Steve Vrabel that he's, quote, excited to see what we can do with him, him being Adrian Peterson, though didn't say whether we're excited to see what we can do with him this Sunday. was correct. Something that was going to be happening. Peterson, for his part, was asked about, you know, his role with the team, and he said, obviously, I still want to play just for the love of the game. I love the game. I feel like I can still compete at a high level. Just having the opportunity to help teams, to inspire guys, that's one of the most rewarding things. So still no exact word on whether or not he's actually going to play this weekend.
He's going to play.
Really?
I'm pretty confident he's going to play. I'd be really surprised. I'd really be surprised if he doesn't play in this game. Now, let's say he gets into it and he just doesn't pick up the playbook for whatever reason as quickly as they would hope or anticipating, then maybe he doesn't. They keep him on the practice squad for one more week before they put him in. But, you know, with Adrian Peterson, all the years that he's played in this league, he's been to a couple different systems now. I think he has it down in terms of the approach of how to study a new playbook, how to get it down. So I just would be really surprised if you don't see Adrian Peterson out there this Sunday.
Three Buccaneers players, Antonio Brown, Mike Edwards, and a former player, John Franklin III, were found to have provided fake vaccination cards to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They'll now be suspended for 3 games.
Honestly, I thought that this was a little surprising that it was only 3 games. And then also that the team didn't get in trouble at all. I mean, I guess it comes down to...
I would have to imagine there's... Well, no. I mean, ESPN said the NFL did not levy a fine on the Buccaneers, although they have for previous COVID-19 violations. Like the Raiders last year got a $500,000 fine, and the Packers very recently, with Aaron Rodgers, got a $300,000 fine.
Right.
So in their minds, for instance, they were saying, look, the Green Bay Packers, it's not like Aaron Rodgers came at them with a fake vaccination card. They knew that he was not vaccinated. And in their mind, I think in the minds of the NFL officials, the Green Bay Packers did not follow complete COVID protocol precautions,
yeah,
which they didn't, honestly, because Aaron Rodgers wasn't vaccinated and was maskless in person at press conferences, which technically is a violation of those protocols. So the NFL was like, look, if you knew he wasn't, you shouldn't have done that, whatever. In the minds of the NFL, the Buccaneers might not have known that these three weren't vaccinated because they might also have seen those vaccination cards and just assumed, all right, great.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's true. So it is a very surprising situation. Bold strategy by those guys. And I could have told you, you try to fake identification. You try to fake a parking pass at Skyline High School as a sophomore.
Jake?
It's going to work for a while, but eventually you're going to get caught.
Are you talking about someone? It sounds like a personal story. It sounds like a personal connection.
They got Jake's mugshot in the school office.
Don't
to this
trust
day.
This man's
Don't
parking
Don't let this
pass.
Man park on our property.
He is not qualified to park in this lot.
No, I did the crime. I did my time, and they let me back, okay? So thank goodness for that.
How long did that last? How long were you able to get away with a counterfeit parking pass?
I think it was a 2-day suspension.
Now, here's my question, because it would genuinely, I'd be pleasantly surprised and proud of you. Did you print it yourself? Did you do all the technical stuff yourself?
No.
All right.
Wow.
Wow, who was the accomplice?
Hired somebody?
Hold up. Who was the
Are you going to send this person up the river here?
No. I would never do that.
Yeah, snitches get stitches.
Exactly.
So
I'll
you
never
had a friend that was doing it, and you were like, let me also have a
I think the statute of limitations
passed. Let me get in on that action. Yeah, absolutely.
I like to think it was you in football uniform walking into the library, finding some library assistant kid working at the printer,
no,
just going up to him, hey, you, I need a parking pass.
I have no idea how it came about, but some upperclassman was willing to let me copy their
parking.
Ooh, an
upperclassman.
Yeah. Ooh, wow.
Yep.
All right.
As far as I will go.
Names now,
we'll just get a Skyline yearbook from that year and just start reading off names.
Just going to go through every single name.
Now, is Gino Simone, is he older or younger than you?
He's older.
Interesting.
Oh.
Interesting.
But it wasn't Gino. It wasn't Gino. Gino actually would have taken pleasure in the fact that I had to get into a farther parking lot and then walk to school.
Not
so trust me, it wouldn't have been Gino.
All right, Saints quarterback Taysom Hill may require surgery. He's feared to have suffered a mallet finger injury on his middle finger. Same case as Russell Wilson. Now, I don't know that his season will be done. We're a bit later in the season now, but I'll tell you what, it's not looking great for the quarterback situation of the New Orleans Saints.
Nope.
And you know what? It didn't look great before he got injured either.
No, it didn't. And they weren't able to overcome that. And that's the part that with the New Orleans Saints, I mean, everything that they've been dealing with. I mean, we had the professor on earlier, 7 offensive starters out. I mean, significantly injured. for Sean Payton. I mean, that is tough for anybody to overcome. And despite having a great defense, they have not been able to capitalize on that. And how could you with everything that you've gone through injury-wise on offense? Pretty brutal.
All right, just as we do every single Friday, we are opening up phone lines at 1 p.m. So in about 20 minutes, we're going to open up phone lines. I will give you the number to call at the end of our next segment. So about 5 before 1, I'll give you that number to call, and you guys can call in. Now, here's the question that we're going to get started with. Who needs a great finish to this year in the worst way? It's not just about who's got pressure on him. Russell Wilson's got the most pressure on him, I'd argue. But who really, really needs a great finish to this year in the worst way? We'll look at a couple different topics here, talk about a couple different things with this team, but we're going to start there next. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Football Fridays are powered by the Snoqualmie Casino Sportsbook. This hour of Jake and Stacey, by the way, is brought to you by the Pro Club. Here's my question for you guys. We're going to open up phone lines in about 15 minutes, so stick right by, I don't know, your phones. My phone's always on me. I guess you don't really have to do it. You know, it's 2021.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably something you already have in your pocket. Here's the question. Which Seahawks player or coach needs a great finish this year in the worst way?
Mm-hmm.
And by that, I mean which Seahawks person maybe more than anything needs to be great. I don't mean like, hey, you know, I'd love to see Carlos Dunlap get like 5 sacks to finish out the season. Well, no, Carlos Dunlap isn't really like playing for another contract here. Yes, he'd personally like to get his career sack total higher, but he's not facing something really big to play for.
Correct.
So who needs it in the worst way?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start it off with number one, Russell Wilson. Okay, I mean, he would definitely be somebody on that list. How about Rashad Penny, your former first round pick, who, I don't know, it may not be here in Seattle, but how about his career just in general? I mean, that could be one. Maybe he, you know, goes off for 6 games and they want to maybe bring him back. but you look at...
It's Jake sick, trying to make jokes and then laughing. Right. Sorry, anyway.
Sorry, if I catch enough wind in these lungs. Shane Waldron and... Shane Waldron and Ken Norton Jr., your OC and your DC, them continuing to, you know, show one way or the other about where their future should be here in Seattle. I mean, I think all those things are good candidates to point to. I mean, Stacey, who would you put down there?
I'm looking at Jamal Adams first and foremost. I take that back. I'm looking at Russell Wilson first and foremost because I think that just in the nature of his position as quarterback, no other individual player can do more for momentum heading into the following season than Russell Wilson can if he really picks things up.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going with Jamal Adams as really needing a great finish to the season in the worst way because the Seahawks are probably going to be looking at a top 10 pick.
Sure.
I mean,
it's true.
Maybe they go
off.
It
will be extremely painful. Extremely painful if they have a top 10 pick and it's not theirs to have.
It will not hurt as much if the Seahawks go in there and they're like pick number 6 overall. You know what's going to make that feel a lot better when the Jets have that pick? If Jamal Adams got like some sacks in another pick or two to end the year. Like if he played out of his mind and you were like, you know what? Man, I'm just going to tell myself that they went ahead and actually chose Jamal Adams 6th overall because he's like 26 years old or 25 years old. Otherwise, I think that's going to sting a lot.
Yeah, it will. And in terms of where your team is at, in terms of, you know, the cap situation for all the moves that you need and lack of draft capital to revamp and rebuild your team that is currently 3-8, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is a great place to start with the top 10 pick. And obviously that is not the case here in Seattle. So I agree that there is something for Jamal Adams there. I think Quandre Diggs has already proven that But he's another name that you could throw out there in terms of just continuing to keep adding to the resume. And for him, as he's going into free agency, because that's what the Seahawks elected to do, I mean, does he want to come back here to Seattle? Does Seattle pursue him heavily to return after an amazing season and building off of what he did a year ago? I mean, yeah, that definitely seems to be the case. And how about this one? How about Bobby Wagner? I think Bobby Wagner has a lot to prove over the next, you know, six games as well.
What would you say to someone who said, well, Bobby Wagner has over 100 tackles?
Well, I would say that look at the quality of tackles, right? I mean, Bobby Wagner's been a tackling machine for years, but also I think the quality of those tackles have gone down progressively every year. And what do I mean by quality of tackles? I mean, where are those tackles happening?
I mean, situationally.
Are they happening? Yeah, situationally. Are they happening at the line of scrimmage or around the line of scrimmage? Is it because he's blowing up screenplays? What are those tackles? What do they look like? And so I think that that part, when you have such a discrepancy in terms of what the cap hit is versus you know, the amount of money they could save on the cap, that is always going to be something that you point to. And Bobby Wagner in the next six games, if he can, you know, play extremely well, then maybe it's something you go in the offseason, you say no way, no how. But if he does not perform well, then maybe that is something that you evaluate in the offseason. And that's crazy to say about the legendary Bobby Wagner, but I do think that there is something to that too.
From the Mac and Jack's text line, real question is, who doesn't need one? Well, I actually think there's a lot of good. Like, if you're looking at, hey, who needs to play well for the Seahawks to win? Everyone. Everyone needs to play well. If you're looking at who on a professional sports team should be playing well, the answer is every single person. But if you're looking at who's playing for his future, who's playing for the momentum of this team,
right?
And who more than anyone else on this team needs that or else, then that list becomes a lot smaller. You know what I mean?
Like, yes.
Tyler Lockett's been really solid this year. If Tyler Lockett is just kind of average for the rest of the year, like, I don't know that I'm looking at him thinking, like, I don't know, when do you move on? I'm just going to be thinking, like, you know, you've got some other weapons. Let's see what Dee Eskridge brings. Likewise, with Dwayne Brown, who's been your best offensive lineman, if he finishes the year really struggling, well, I was anticipating the Seahawks would move on from him anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I was kind of anticipating this might be his last year in the NFL.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. And I don't know, did we throw his name out there? But if not, I want to make sure we do, is also, you know, Pete Carroll himself as the head coach. I think that he has a lot that he's not playing for, but he has a lot that he's coaching for right now, and these six games do matter for him as well. So that would be another name that I would submit to the list of potential people that our callers could be sounding off about. So I'll be curious to hear what our callers have to say. Well, always love hearing from you guys. Again, I've got my notepad. I've got my pencil ready to go to take notes, and let's see what you guys got.
The toughest thing with Pete Carroll, I'm interested to see what someone says if they do call in with Pete Carroll as their answer. How do you measure that? What, if the team's winning?
You know what I mean?
Like, I'm genuinely curious. Like, it's easy for me to say, you know what, if Russell Wilson is making completions on third downs, and if he's not overthrowing guys, and if he's making the right plays and not making a ton of mistakes, you can see that he's improved. I feel like it's so much harder to judge outside of wins and losses and in some occasional, you know, coaching mistakes. Like, how do you know that a coach is taking a huge step forward in the second half of the year?
It's a great question. It's a great question.
But I can think of some of what my answers would be, but I'm very curious to know what someone's answer might be.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Phone lines are open. Call right now, 206-421-3776. I want to know who needs a great finish in the worst way. In the worst way, this person needs to go above and beyond. Call in right now, 206-421-3776. 3776. Football Fridays are powered by the Snoqualmie Casino Sportsbook. We're coming back next.